At this time, please help me welcome our speaker tonight. It is Katie from Clear Cut Directions in Ivyland, PA on Wednesday nights.
Hi, I'm Katie. I'm an alcoholic. Okay, she's going to let it out. Thank you so much for having me. This is so hot. Okay. I am actually in Doylestown, but my home group's in Ivyland, Clear Cut Directions. Ugh, love it there. Again, thank you so much for asking me to speak. My sober date is July 5th, 2014. Yeah, that's right, 10 months. I get a lot of flack for that about the time thing, but we'll get into that later. I have a sponsor, and she has a sponsor, and I have several sponsees. That I've taken fully through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is the most gratifying experience I've ever had, better than drugs and alcohol. If you don't know what I'm talking about, maybe you will by the end. I don't know. Come see me if you don't at the end. Okay. Where do I start? Well, I was born March 5th, 1987. I'm 28 years old, and I was born into a family full. I was born into a family full of alcoholics. Great-grandparents, grandparents, parents, brothers, sisters, everybody. So you can imagine the kind of chaos I was born into. Not to mention I was born at a time in my family when everything was falling apart. You know, like, woo, I came into the world and, like, everything's falling and I'm just like, I'm here. And I came in, like, screaming off the bat, you know. And I came in screaming for attention. Because I was the youngest, everybody was like 5 to 8 years older than me, and I just was never, I felt like I was never heard from a really young age. So that's how I learned how to cope, was to scream my head off, to get somebody to look at me, notice me, talk to me, and I was always the baby that everyone handed off, like, okay, my mom raised 3 kids single, in recovery, she's been sober 34 years, she doesn't mind that I talk about it, she's like my hero, you know. She's been sober my entire life. Like, how blessed am I to have grown up in AA? But she was so busy, you know. She's, like, working a program. She's going to school, raising 3 kids. Like, I just was the handoff baby. Like, anybody that would take me, she was like, go. Like, she didn't. She had to. So, needed attention really bad. Super hypersensitive. It says in the book, apparently we all are, but some worse than others. And I was bad. So I grew up like running around being crazy, screaming all the time. And I had like a lot of friends in school. Like, I'm charismatic, you know, I had friends, like I wasn't in the corner alone all the time, like being worried about who, like this and that. But I used all my rage and my emotions and all that to like numb me. I don't know if anyone relates to that, but I did. And I had all that worry under there about who liked me, who didn't, and all that, but it didn't really surface yet because I was just screaming all the time and, like, really crazy. And, like, we called them temper tantrums when I was little, like, severe temper tantrums. So then I went to high school, like, you know, dated the football player, but I was, like, super artsy, but I thought I was really cool. Like, my ego was huge. Probably still is, but I asked God today to remove it because it's not about me. And so... In high school, it was like 14, you know, the typical first drink thing. But I do remember it. And, like, I like to talk about it. It was an awesome time. Like, I was at a party, and a kid had a beer bong. And I was like, boop, like, right up, down the hatch, awesome, beer, loved it. And that was it. Like, and I didn't, like, arrive or anything like that. It was just more like I was just ready to have fun. And I used to think when I first came in I didn't have that allergy. Like, I didn't know. I wasn't sure yet. I didn't know what the allergy was when I first came in, but now that I'm clearer, I think back and I remember the minute I had that beer, I was like rage, like ready to go. And that's the allergy to me. That's how I interpreted my allergy, was like the minute I had a beer, like I just wanted to party. So all through high school, like I partied and I didn't know it wasn't normal to like go in on Monday. All my friends were doing stuff. Like I was in the art club, but like I didn't really go. And I left school early all the time, but I wasn't super bad. Like, I was a pretty good kid, but I always was ready for Friday night. Like, I planned it out. I was, like, crazy, and then I got butterflies, and Friday came, and I was like, we're going to party, and, like, I'm going to do my hair and be all excited. And none of my friends felt like that. Like, I found out. Like, I asked them. I was like, did you guys feel like that? And they were like, no, because they're normal. Now I found out they're normal, too. And I'm like, huh. That's weird. I thought everyone felt excited to come, like, go out on Friday night. So whatever, that's what I did. Had lots of boyfriends. Always had a boyfriend. I loved having a boyfriend. And I would usually torture them, and I would tell them all the things that were wrong with them. And then I didn't have to look at me. It was my drug. Like, I have, like, everything was my drug. Anything that made me feel a little bit okay, I was like, yep, you're mine. Mine. And then I wouldn't let you go, and then you would leave, or I would get sick of you. Like a tornado, like they say. And I used to, like, read that in the book and be like, I'm not a tornado. I didn't destroy anything. I had a beautiful apartment when I decided to get sober. I have a great job that I never lost. I wasn't a tornado. And, like, now, like, once you go through these motions and you do this stuff, like, you start to really see how much of a tornado you really were, you know? Like, I just didn't give a shit. I prayed to, like, not curse, but it's going to happen. I did not care about anybody's feelings. Like, I really didn't. I just cared about myself. And I had no clue. Like, that's the delusion, you know? Like, if you're here and you're like, what am I doing here? I'm sitting around a bunch of people, chain smoking cigs, listening to this girl. Like, what am I doing here? Like, you're here for something. And maybe you're still in that delusion. Like, I was in it for a long time. And by the grace of God, like, I broke out of that delusion. And I really, like, I just wish everyone could have that. But you're going to get it. Like, people just get it when they get it. And that's what I've been learning and have to accept. So anyway, college, super fun. Or no, sorry, high school. I'm not there yet. High school was really fun. I had a great time. Like, I was in such a delusion that I was just, like, going, like, had fun, parties all the time. I was, like, the life of the party. And, like, I was fun then, and I didn't realize how much my attention-seeking was, like, so annoying. But I wasn't super annoying yet, like, to everyone, I think. I think I think people liked me then. So then it was, like, college time, and I'm like, amen, like, I'm out of here. And I lived, mind you, in a sober house. Like, everyone was sober. My sister is on her path. My brother's on his path. You know, we've all got our thing, right? I even made up a song, a joke song. Everybody's got their something, you know, because everybody's got their something, you know. And I had my thing, and I thought I was, like, the shit. I was going to college. No one else went to college in my family. I was the youngest. My mom, I'm the favorite. I'm going to say it. I am. And so, anyway, I lived in this sober home where my parents were split up. But my dad's also sober, and, like, I saw him every other weekend. He was in my life. That was real rocky, chaos everywhere. Mom, chaos everywhere. Like we had dogs and cats and animals everywhere. And, like, it was just, like, why are you going to raise three kids and you're going to work three jobs and also go to night school and get us, like, four dogs? Like, it doesn't make sense about the chaos causing. It's because she couldn't do it either, you know? Like, she had to numb out in some way, and she was sober. So it was, like, all adding, like, we just filled that space, you know? We had to fill that space somehow. And I just remember, like, one time I came home, like, walking home from the bus or whatever, and my mom's car was, like, in the driveway, door open, purse on the door. And, like, you know exactly how she pulled in the driveway, right? Like, bat out of hell. Like, left the door open, ran inside on the phone. Like, you left your purse, your car door open. Like, it just didn't make sense to me, and it just became my normal because – like, it was just, that's how I grew up. Like, oh, my mom just leaves the door open, and that's fine. And, like, I would grab the bag and shut the door and be like, Mom, you forgot your bag. Like, what are you doing? Always on the phone. We used to say she needed phone talkers anonymous when I was little. I knew what AA, like, I knew all about AA. Like, in our little change junk drawer, it was all, like, AA coins. Like, that was normal for me. And I really didn't think, like, it would, I don't know, I didn't actually, I think the delusion was so thick that you don't actually think you're going to be an alcoholic, I think, or something. I don't know. I really didn't think so. I thought I could go to college and, like, party hard and totally, like, skate by. So I was, like, living my life on this, like, beam of just pretty, I'm going to call it neutral. I was just, like, flowing, you know. I was always passing. I was always doing good. I always looked okay to everyone. So I was, like, cool. And so the chaos just always was there. And then I went to college, and I moved there, not too far away, to Millersville University, and it was, like, the best, most exciting time of my life, besides this. because I was like free, you know, like I lived in the chains of soberness, like at my house. And I was like, ah. And I would sneak out of this one window at my house and like I'd always fall. Like just picture me like climbing out and like I would fall out of the window every time and be like, I'm going to get caught. I just always had to be secretive, you know, because I knew deep down what I was doing was not okay. Like I knew that I had to lie. I had to, but they weren't like too big of lies. Like that's what I would tell myself, you know, but I always had to be like, looking okay to my mom because she was like up here. Like I put her up here. She was this sober woman, but I wasn't going to be sober. Like that's okay for her. But I mean, I'm going to live my life. Like, I needed it. It was my spirit. So I was always going for that. So I went to college and I got these roommates and like they were super fun. And this one girl who is now is still my best friend. And she was so innocent. Like, I don't even think she even smelled vodka before. And I was like, what? Let's go. Like, and I introduced her to some drinking. She still talks about it. Like, you know, whatever. I made amends to her. She's fine. And everything's cool. Like, I'm her maid of honor in her wedding. Super exciting. But I love her. She's my human angel. She's always been there for me. And I met this girl, and, like, it was just awesome. And we ran the streets. Like, that's what I call it. Like, no, we were in Millersville in the suburbs. But we ran it. Like, I hosted every party. Like, I sold the cups. Like, I was a freshman, and people were like, will you come to my house and sell the cups for me? Because I was loud, and I didn't give a shit. And all the men were scared of me because I could out beer bong you. And, like, and I was mean, though. I wasn't nice. And this is where I started to, like, think I was finding myself. I was falling into it, you know? And I was mean, and I was that girl. And the young kids that were, like, pledging for the frats were like, can I have a cup, ma'am? Like, they were scared of me. And that's a shame, you know? Like, I don't want people to be scared of me. I think back to that. I'm like, ew, I'm disgusted by who I was. And I just, it filled me up. It made me who I was. And then in the meantime, I'm dating anyone who will have me. And someone will be interested. I'm like, sold. I'll date you for a little. Like, I never thought about anything. I didn't think about, like, maybe I should get to know you. Maybe I should see who you are. Like, no, I had a veil over here, and I didn't give a shit. I just wanted you to make me better. Like, make me feel better. I would say that, like, 100 times. Like, why aren't you making me feel better? That's sick. Like, if you don't see that's – if you say that now, like, get with me. Like, let's do something. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's not okay. Because now I'm okay. Like, I feel better now, you know? And when I feel – I'm human. I get crazy. But I know what to do now, you know? I, like – take a minute. Like, I don't got to freak out. I don't have to, like, jump, you know? I don't have to go find a boyfriend really quick. Make me, like, that's what I did. I don't know. Maybe I'll do it again. Who knows what's going to happen? But I'm, like, anti-dating, so don't even. So anyway, so I went to college, and, like, I had a serious boyfriend. I had a serious boyfriend for every year I was in college. I was in college 5 years. This isn't even a joke, Dave. Like, I'm serious. I had 5 serious boyfriends, and each time they got a little more alcoholic. And each time I got a little more like, they're the one, you know? Really? I still look at back at the one guy on Facebook. I'm like, I swear I was going to marry you. You know, like, I could have sworn. And they got worse and worse too. And, like, by the end, the last guy, he was like a drug dealer. Like, he was dealing coke in our college. Like, what? And I thought I was cool because we could wake up and, like, smoke weed and then go to McDonald's and we could make it to McDonald's breakfast. Like, that was a triumph. 10:30. Oh no, Sunday, it stays open until 11. You know, like, you're all excited. That was cool. Like, and little did I know, over here, there was this whole nook of, like, amazingness, you know? Like, my mom's over here in Philly or wherever she was, Horsham, like, and she was living this life that I had no clue about. And I dreaded going home from college every holiday, every time. I was like, no, the sober people. It's torture, you know? But I had no clue. I wasn't normal. I really thought. It's so weird. Like, I wish I could explain it. I feel like you guys probably know what I mean when I say, like, I really thought this was normal. Like, you go home from college, you're miserable for the week for break, and then whatever. And then I look back, I'm like, I'm so privileged. Like, I was so privileged to even have the opportunity to be in college and live there. Like, so, such a baby, you know? So anyway, like, so my mom's over here living this life, you know? And everyone in her life was in AA. So everyone that I was in my life was in AA that I grew up around. And so I'm over here, like, thinking it's all about the party and the men and the blah, blah, blah. So it got pretty bad. Like, I just partied so much. And at one point I was, like, puking blood in college. But I didn't really know that was, like, I just, like, I gotta, oh my God, I'm gonna say it because I don't care. I had to get, like, an endoscopy and a colonoscopy to see why I was puking and shitting blood. And then, like, that day they were like, you know, you can't eat and, like, you gotta relax afterwards and whatever. And, like, I went to a frat party. Like, I did that. I did not care about my body or anything because I was gonna miss out. I had fear of missing out so bad. Oh my God, like, I was gonna miss the same party I've been to for the last 5 years. Like, it's every night is the same, you know? So anyway, so college was, you know, crazy. It was chaos all the time. I always was going. I don't think I ever sat with myself. Like, before here, I went up in the sanctuary thing and, like, sat for, like, 12 straight minutes. Like, holy, oh my God. I was like, and I prayed and talked to myself and whatever. Like, never. I'm a different person. Like, this is not who I was. I had a girl ask me, like, one time. She was like, is it, like, we were going through the steps and I said something about how I do my inventory at night. And she was like, well, did you used to do that before? And I was like, what? No, I did not know what was going on before. Like, this was not a thing. Someone had to teach me this, you know? And I had to be ready to learn it and be open to it because I wasn't hearing anything. I just want to see what I'm... Oh, I got lots more. So anyway, so, like, after I graduated, what? Like, I didn't go to class ever. I seriously never did. I don't know. I was an art major, though. I had a fine arts degree, so, you know, you can imagine. I was, like, painting 420 or, like, ripping and, like, painting and, like, all this stuff. So I graduate, and it was, like, a miracle. 5 years it took, though. I had an extra year at college. And by then, by, like, that fifth year, though, like, I thought the fifth year was going to be fun and great, and I was, like, done. Like, I was, like, I had gone through, like, six groups of friends. Like, half of my friends were done with me. And not, I don't, well, maybe because of my drinking, but it's just the chaos thing. Like, people were just like, whoa. And they started to get normal, you know? Like, they started to grow out of the party thing. They were, like, 22, 23. They started settling down, and I was just like, what? Like, let's rage. And they were going, you know, that way, and I was still here. And I had that best friend I told you about, you know? And she was going here, you know? She had a boyfriend. She was like, we broke up. We call it our breakup. We broke up for like a year and a half. We did not speak. And this girl's like my soulmate kind of deal. And that was a result of my drinking. And I used to think it was her. I'm like, she's a bitch and she wants her boyfriend over me. Like, no, I'm so hard to be around. That's it, you know? I'm so hard to be around. I'm probably still hard to be around, but this time I bring a little bit of light, you know? I try anyway. And so I graduated and I went home and like I moved in with, who did I move in with? Okay. So I moved in with my aunt in Feasterville. She was kind enough to like let me have their basement because my mom lived in Philly in this tiny little place. And I was like, well, I can't live with you here. It's too small, you know? This is like, I didn't think about, oh, I'll cramp your life. Like, no, it's all about me. So I was like, I can't live with you. I must go here. So I moved in with my aunt and it was glorious there. She made breakfast every morning. It was like a dream. And my aunt and uncle are super awesome, and they're so normal and healthy, and it's like, whoa, that's weird. But it was cool to be around that. So I started working, and I had, a day job, a 9-to-5. My sister helped me get in New Jersey. So I would, like, sit in an office all day long. And if you can tell, that is torture for me. I need to talk. I need to be with people. I need, you know, I can't do that. So for 2 years, I was like, and I can't, and I was the youngest one there. I had, like, pink hair. I had, like, two nose rings or something. And everyone there, you know, I would always try and have fun and whatever. And then after, like, a year and a half, I started to die out. And, like, really just – I was, like, miserable. And I even, like, took off the summers. Like, you can even do that. I, like, stopped getting paid, and I took off the summers to live in Seattle City, New Jersey. So ridiculous. And by this time, I was about, like, 23 – Yeah, 23, and my mom introduced me to Al-Anon, that tricky little lady. She would like, she was like handing me nuggets my whole life, you know, and I had no clue. She's so sweet, and she like totally let me go, man. She let me go. She did not let my brother go. I hope she listens to this. She did not let my brother go, but she let me go, and thank God for that. I don't think I'd be here, honestly, if she held on any tighter, because she let me just find it, find the pain, you know? Like, I went right for that pain. I was like, yeah. Because I needed, like, crazy. So she introduced me to Al-Anon because I had the boyfriend that was the coke dealer. It was getting crazy. And, like, he cheated on me with my roommate and, like, I found out or something. I don't know. And then they lied about it and ended up together on Facebook. Blech. You know, the whole shebang. So I was like, oh, my life's over. I have to make new friends, blah, blah, blah. And she handed me this book, and it was called Facing Love Addiction. And I was like, and I read it in 2 hours straight, front to back, and it was me. And I was like, oh, my God. And it's all the isms. Like, it's not just love addiction. It's really called codependence, but we don't really call it that because people freak out when they hear love addiction. They're like, well, I'm not a love addict. No, it's codependence. I'm pretty sure. I'm just going to generalize. I'm pretty sure we all got a little bit of that. It's the isms. So I read this book, and I was, like, scared because awareness hit, you know. Oh, my God, awareness is the craziest place to be if you don't have some tools. And so I had awareness, right? I think so. If you don't have, like, a little something – it's a scary place to be. And I read that book, and I was like, oh, no, she did not. And I remember I was in the basement, and I stomped upstairs, and I was like, and I handed her the book. I was like, never again. Never effing again. Give me something like that. And she was like, too soon. Like, she, in her head, she was thinking, like, well, she's not ready for that. And it's funny, on the drive here, I was talking about how my awareness came so slowly. Like, I had little nuggets here and there, and it was all on God's time because I couldn't handle it. I couldn't handle too much awareness at once. And I see some girls have all this awareness at once and they're freaking out about their awareness. And I don't know. I just say, just trust, just relax. This is the process. It's okay. And they can't. And I can't help them, you know. I have no power over what they feel. But it's funny because I realized that on the way here. I was like, my awareness just came perfect timing for my awareness, you know. But the doors of Olympus sprung wide open in a little bit. We'll get there. But anyway, I like that joke. So I'm living it. I'm working at the office. I'm like pissed and bored. I'm depressed. I'm like drinking all summer. I'm drinking every weekend. Like, you know, and I'm not an alcoholic. I only drink on the weekends. I party with my friends just like they do. Like, there's no way I'm one of you guys. That's crazy. And I didn't, it wasn't even in the sight. That wasn't even in the forethought. So I have a friend who lives in Mexico. And it's a girl I went to college with, and she, like, taught me how to drink. Like, really, she did. And so she and I are talking, and she's like, and I'm telling her how miserable I am and blah, 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 blah. She's like, why don't you come here? Why don't you come visit me? I live in Cancun. And I'm like, oh, my God. Ding, ding, ding. That's it. So my job is all, like, super all about traveling and stuff, the job I had. So they were like, you need to go. You need to do this. Well, you'll have a job when you get back. I'm like, because that was my only fear holding me back. I was like, oh, I have this good job out of college. Like, I had, like, some sense in here, like, a little bit. And it was, like, holding me there. And then it was like, no, go. YOLO. Like, literally, that was playing in my head. I'm not kidding. I'm saying it with proudness. Like, I literally said, like, you only live once. Go. Who cares? It's Cancun. So, like, visitor for a week. This was my, what's it called? Like, when you stop and think or whatever. Like, that stupid thing they say. Halt. Halt. Like, that was my halt. Like, I visited for a week. That was my, like, stopping and researching and, like, seeing if I wanted to be there. So I go to Cancun for a week. What do you think happened there? So I partied like crazy, and I was like, I totally want to live here. And so I moved there within, like, 2 weeks. I had, like, a little bit of savings, enough savings down there to last me, like, a while. And I got this job working for a spring break company, and I was like, woo. So my job, they put me up in this resort. I mean, it was, like, it just fell in my lap. I got put up in this resort and I took these kids. They were like 18, 19, 20, 21. They were all in college. I took them to the clubs in Cancun and I was kind of like their nanny. Dumb. but I was allowed to drink, even dumber. And like I lived at the biggest spring break resort. So it was like all it was a party. So you wear your like badge around and your t-shirt for the company so they know you work there. So you can literally do whatever you want. So anyway, I did that and it was like crazy fun. But, like, this, the sadness had already hit by this point, like, for sure. And I had – and the other reason I moved there was because I was in therapy for, like, a solid year before that. And I really thought I was, like, finding myself. Like, my therapist was awesome. We were getting somewhere. And it's so funny. They talk about all this in the book, you know? Like, I was really getting somewhere. I started to understand the inner workings of my mind, like, you know? And I found me, and I was like, I'm going. Like, I'm on top of the world. And I had some good coping skills by that point, and I was a little bit different. And I went there, and they all just fell to this, like, they just went away. Like, they just disappeared. And I was back into that place, but I was drinking all the time, and I was partying, so it didn't matter. But I, like, knew a little bit. And, of course, I latched on to somebody right away, like this guy. who lived there. He was the love of my life. And so I dated him for like 2 weeks. And it felt like a year, okay? It really did, I swear to God. And he was like the manager of this club who like could get me in everywhere. So by that point, it was like I stopped working. Like I didn't even show up. I was like sleeping in his apartment the whole time. I like, never went back to the resort. I don't even know what happened to that job. Seriously. And I was just like partying and like he would just take care of me. And I was like, whoo, this is fun. And then they offered me a job at like the club to work, and I would do the same thing. I would bring people from the hotels to the club. So that was my job. I was like a party planner person. Really good job for an alcoholic. And I feel like everyone's alcoholics there, but I can't generalize. But I think so. And like we just partied till 7 a.m. So anyway, like I did that job, and then I broke up with the guy. Because I got cool and I had a new job. And I'm independent because I went to therapy for a year. So I could do this, live in Mexico. What? So I moved in with my friend Kelly from college, who I knew I felt safe with. She taught me all the ins and outs. Like she taught me how to talk to the taxi driver and like order food and get cell phone minutes because that's what you had to do. You had to like order them in Spanish. So like I was really getting my footing down. I met this guy. And so I moved in with him, like right away. So we were together a year and a half, like a long time, maybe a little less, but almost the whole time I was there. And he took care of me and did everything. And it was super toxic. And he was raging alcoholic. And as was I, you know. But when I was with him, I could really drink less because I had to always be on him. Like he was my new drug. He was now my new higher power. He was my new spirit. Like I just like wanted to manage his life. And I did really good, I feel like. Like, he probably would have died if we weren't together for a little bit there. But anyway, so I'm there, and I'm, like, raging really hard. And this is kind of when they talk about that thing where, like, it turns dark. It turns dark, and it really did there. Like, I was, first of all, I was in another country. They didn't speak my language. I had no money. I mean, talk about living poor. You don't make anything there. And I was on the high end of, like, making money because I could speak English and it was a touristy town. And I had to rely on this guy, like, for life. Like, that's no way to live. And it filled me up for a little bit, you know, but, like, it did not work. And I did remember, like, the stuff I had learned in Al-Anon, and I did remember that stuff, and I wanted that life. But, like, this life was so much more flashy, and I just, like, go to flashy things. And so it got real toxic, and he works till like 8 in the morning at a club. And like I was on the phone every morning like, where are you? You're going to lose your cell phone. You're going to get lost. Like I was crazy. And I was like crying every night. And like I didn't know this wasn't normal, like a normal way to live. And then I would go out and party with my friends. And he would hate me for it. Like it was just not okay. Like I'm not that person. That's the person alcohol like turned me into, you know, and it really turned dark. And there was a party I went to and like, he wouldn't come. And I'm like, you don't want to hang out with my friends. And he was like, well, F you. And I'm going to play video games. And I was like, meh. And I went to the party and I just bombed. Like I got bombed and I came back and I was locked out of the apartment. And I was like, meh, freaking out. I was like, that's it. We're done. And that's how I used to do things. Like, it was like 1 second. I'm like, I'm here. I live with you. And the next second, nope, we're done. And he was like, what? And I'm like, we're done. F you, we're done, I'm done, I'm out. I called my mom in America, and I was like, book me a ticket so I can't change my mind. And that was God. That was not me. Even though the irrational thinking is not normal to just make one decision to the next and just be done, that was my black and white thinking, but that black and white thinking saved my life. Like, oh, I'm real emotional too. You're going to get a good one. And I cry a lot. That saved my life. That alcohol and that black and white thinking and all those things because I needed that at the time, you know. But as I started to get older, like I didn't need the screaming and the carrying on and the hypersensitivity, and I didn't need those coping skills anymore. They didn't work. People just looked at me weird, like, what's wrong with you, you know. And that's when the awareness started. Like I got on that plane. I had $5 in my pocket, and I got off the plane and my mom was there and I was like, I'm changing my life. Like, you know, so I was like, I was tired. And it wasn't enough. So I was like, I'm going to get back into Al-Anon and I'm going to like do this thing because I thought it was everyone else. And I'm like, I live in chaos. Like I'm an adult child. Like I need Al-Anon. But instead, for a little bit, I was like, but what's the better solution would be to make money quick, you know? So I'm like, and it was the summer. So I was like, I'll move to Seattle. We have a place in Seattle. I was like, I'll live there for the summer and work and make a ton of money and save, and then figure out what I want to do with my life. And so I went to Seattle and I worked at a bar and I drank the whole summer. And this is when it turned super, super dark. I mean, to the point where I blacked out every single night. And I wasn't really blacking out in Mexico, maybe because I was on drugs as well, but like just a little bit of coke to keep me up. But like, I think I was blacking out here because I was just, I don't know what happened. That allergy kicked into full gear. Like it was progressing and it was progressing hard. And I was blacking out and I didn't know, I would wake up like naked. And I didn't know what happened. Like, I don't know if any women in here felt like that, but that is one scary place to be. That is scary, you know? And every time I talk about it, I heal from it. It's like so amazing. And I knew it. And halfway through the summer, never once did my mom say, I think you have a problem. She kept keeping that arm's length to, I don't know why. I don't know. I think so much of her focus was on my brother who's in severe addiction that she just didn't say anything. And then one day she called me and she said, Kate, I've had a lot of friends calling me, seeing your Facebook, and they're worried. And it hit me like a ton of knives in my gut. I was like, what? They're worried about me? I'm fine. You know? And then I had to admit it. I was like, maybe it's Seattle's the problem. So I was like, it's definitely Seattle. So I was like, Mom, everyone here is an alcoholic. I was like, everyone drinks. She's like, have you blacked out? That's what she said. And she says it's so funny. She's like, did you go to the state store? I'm like, you haven't drank in so long. You call it the state store still. You know, she's 34 years. So she was like, do you black out? And I'm like, no, that's crazy. And I'm like, oh my God, I black out. Why is she asking me that? Is that a thing? And really, that's what's going on in my head. I'm like, is that a thing? Is blacking out bad? I think it might be. I don't know. Blacking out's always been normal. It was like August, you know, summer wasn't over yet, but I was like, nope, I'm moving home. That's it. I'm done. I'm changing my life again. And I moved back in with her. So I like move in with my mom. Love that poor woman. Love her so much. So I move in with her and she is like just the best. So she rallies for me and she gets me a job. And this is like God too. Again, like this job fell in my lap and it was in the addiction treatment field. Are you kidding me? Are you freaking kidding me? And she works in the addiction treatment field, right? I knew what she did. I never paid attention to her and what her life was about. I never cared about her interests, her thoughts, her love, her passions ever. I knew she worked there. I didn't know what that meant, you know? So she gets me this job. I'm in sales. There it is. That's the job for me, you know? I could sell this thing. So I start selling drug testing to treatment facilities. I'm going to conferences surrounded by AA people. In the morning, they would wake up and do AA meetings at 6 a.m. And Al-Anoners would be there. So I started going to Al-Anon, and I was like, whoa, and life got really good. Life got so freaking good. And this was like a year before I decided to get sober, and life got really good, and I got a sponsor in Al-Anon, and I didn't drink much. I, like, really didn't. I had that time, you know, where they say you can put it down for a little, and I thought, okay, this solidifies it. I'm not an alcoholic, because I always had that in my head, because I grew up around alcoholics. Like, I don't know what I would have done if I didn't grow up around alcoholics, because I truly don't know that I would have found this place. I truly don't know that I would have known there was a word for this. And I always felt not right. I always was out of place. And I got into Al-Anon and I still didn't feel like it felt like home. You know, that feeling? I don't know. When I walked into AA, man, I was ready to go. This was home for me. Some people walk in, they're pissed, they're not ready. That's fine. I was ready. I was here, you know? And but Al-Anon, I didn't feel like that. And I was like, this shit's not working. I'm working the 12 steps. I turned it over. And I'm like, I went out like, twice a month I would let myself go out and I would like be like two beers and then no one would look and I would like take a shot and then I would get a taxi home and had my own apartment in the city. So I was like, okay, because I could be drunk by myself. No one cares. I didn't drink by myself really to that point, but I would go out, get real drunk. No one would really know I was that drunk. I'd go home by the time it started happening and I was wasted. So I would drink just a little like through that year and I really controlled it. Like I did. I was good. But it was so tiring. I mean, like, I was miserable and I had anxiety. And, like, I would have, like, my friends would all go out for martinis because we started to get older, you know? We started to get classier. We didn't drink the Bud Light anymore. We drank the martinis with the Grey Goose, and I started drinking them, and they were good. I love them. I love olive juice. But anyway, so I drink the martini, and then everyone would be like, all right, we're going to go home. And I'm like, like dying, like what? And now that I've been clear enough to know that, that was the allergy telling me, like, no, party, drink more, you know? So anyway, like, that's all happening, but I have this job and, like, blah, blah, blah. And so then, so a little bit later, like, I get a little bit of vacation time, and this is when it really happens for me. You know, this is when the doors swing wide open for me. I get this little bit of vacation time, and I'm thinking, okay, number one, the saintly moral Kate would go to North Carolina or South Carolina. It's like one of those little islands where you take a little boat and you camp by yourself, and there's, like, wild horses. Like, that was one idea, right? I was like, I'm going to do that. Because I travel for work, so I could go down for work and then just, you know, whatever. And then the other little devil over here was like, go to Cancun and see your friends. Like, it was like whispering to me. And I'm like, oh, I have 6 days. I could go to Cancun. And like they say, like, your disease is doing push-ups in the parking lot or whatever. Like, my disease was like powerlifting in the, like legitimately getting riled up in the parking lot. Which one do you think I chose? Come on, guess it. Guess it, Dave. I sure did. I chose Cancun, and I went with a friend that I met in Al-Anon. Yeah, she drinks a little. And we got there, and it was over. Got there, and I don't remember the whole week, honestly. It was the wildest I think I've ever gotten. And I was in a blackout the whole time, except for, like, the mornings and a little bit of beach time. It was so hot. I was like, ooh, like, the whole time. I didn't do any drugs, but I only drank the whole time. But I drank, and I blacked out, and I met lots of men, and I did a lot of things. I did a lot of things that were really, really shameful. Things that, like, they're just not, it's not who I want to be, you know? It's totally not who I am. But I had no clue who I was. I did not love me. I didn't know. I didn't care. This was nothing. This was like a vessel. Just do whatever you want, you know? That is horrible. And I came home and I knew what I did, you know? I knew. On that plane, I was so anxietied up. Like, I was so crazy on the plane home. My friend was like, take a Xanax and fucking shut up. She couldn't even take it, you know, and I was in so much pain, and I took it, and I was like, ow. And then I got home, and I was up again, and I was like, oh, my God. And that, and the next morning, I woke up, and I was, like, just in shame. And I, like, was like, I'm never drinking again. And you know how many times I said that? Like, an outrageous amount of times. And I was like, I'm never drinking again. And that was, like, in June, the beginning of June, right? And so a month goes by and I really hadn't drank. And I, like, 2 weeks after that, I went to Planned Parenthood because I was, like, really scared of my, for my life. Like, I did some shit there. And I got tested and I was, like, negative. And I was like, oh, my God, thank you, God. Like, thank you. And I was, whatever. So July 4th comes around. My sober date's July 5th. So you can imagine what my July 4th was like. I got wasted and I blacked out and, like, made out with a 21-year-old. I'm 28. It's not okay. It's just not. And I woke up and I was puking just all day long and I was sick. I was physically ill. Like, and I hadn't been that hungover in a long time. And, like, my friend was like, we need Bloody Marys. I'm like, yeah, that'll fix everything. No. And I couldn't even get it. I didn't even drink. I couldn't even get it down. I couldn't even drink. And I was so sick. I mean, so physically ill. And you know what the craziest part is? God had never left me the whole time. Because that Sunday, that was the Saturday, the 5th, that Sunday I was going to Georgia somewhere, because I won at work a week at a workshop for codependence and love addiction. I was going to a treatment center for a week for work, but not really. It was for my own, like, they were like, well, you win this and you get to go. And I was like, oh, my God. Well, I was all at work. I was all like, I'm amazing. I'm working on myself. I'm in Al-Anon. Hell yeah, I'll go to codependence treatment. 5 days, intensive work, therapy. Hell yeah. Like, not. And I just went to Cancun like a month ago. And then I just wild out on 4th of July. So I was like, well, this is it. I get to quit drinking. I get to go to codependence treatment. I get to really get a grasp on this thing. And I'm going to do it. And I remember thinking, I want to be sober. I remember thinking, I don't want to drink anymore. I don't want this anymore. I want to be present. That was the word that kept ringing in my head, present. I want to be there. And I knew I couldn't have a sip if I wasn't going to be present. I knew it. And so I decided to not drink. And so July 5th, my sober date, and I went to that treatment center, and I had a week with these amazing women, and while I was there, I found out I was pregnant. Ugh. And I was a month pregnant. What do you think happened in Cancun? You know what I'm saying? And I was pregnant, and I had no clue whose it was. Sheer terror took over me. I mean, my body, I couldn't feel. I was done. But I never wanted to drink again. And you know what? How delusional I was. I was so delusional that I thought, thank you, God. This is it. This is what's going to save me. I get to be sober now because I'm pregnant. How sick is that? And selfish, for one. That is the most selfish thing, to think you're going to have this baby because you're going to be sober. That is sick. And I had no clue how sick I was. And I had a friend who was that girl from Cancun. Remember her from college? And she was sober a year. She got sober. And she said, Kate, you can't go through with this pregnancy. I said, fuck you. I was like, I'm going to do this. You think I can't be a mom? You think I can't do this? So I was having that kid. You remember me, black and white thinking, don't take any advice, don't think about anything. Within 6 hours of that pregnancy test, I was like, yep, I'm having a baby. Called my mom. She was like, oh, God. You know? Like, what do? I don't know. I'm so crazy. I'm so delusional. What do you do with that? She couldn't do anything. No human power was going to break me of that delusion. The pain was going to break me, you know? And so I changed my whole life. I moved out of the apartment. I went home. I moved in with my mom. I was like, we're going to do this thing. I started actually saving money. That's like a feat for anybody. It's so hard to save, let me just say. So I'm like, I'm going to live with you. I'm going to save money. And me and you are going to raise this thing together. Like, not thinking that maybe my mom wants to retire and, like, go to Florida. Like, nope, you're going to raise a kid with me because I don't know who the dad is. So it's me and you, Mom. It's going to be a troop. It's going to be a villa. Everyone's like, it takes a village. Okay, great. So you guys are all going to help me then? Cool. Like, no. And God stepped in again. And it's weird. I wanted to be sober. And I said it a few days before I found out I was pregnant. I was like, I want to be sober so bad. And then I got pregnant. And that was my catalyst right there. That was what thrust me into sobriety. I was like, I have to be sober now. You know, I have to treat my body right now. So fear kept me sober for about a month, you know. And I was sober and I was pregnant. And I was like, yes, I get to be sober. I get to see what that's like. And I was done with partying. I partied so much. Like, I had my time. I was over it. I don't care anymore. I was so tired. And then like a month in, I was a mom by this point. I changed my head. Your whole thinking changes when you're going to be a mom, you know? And I went to the doctor by myself because I thought it was a routine check. And they were like, your baby has a severe birth defect. And this baby's going to come out and it is going to need to be in CHOP for years. And you're going to raise a kid in a tube, basically. And I said, what? What is this? Like, it was one thing after another. Pain, 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 pain. God was just like beating me down. He had to, you know? And I remember I was sitting on the couch. It was this tan couch at my mom's. And I said, please. And this was the prayer. You know, they say the prayer. I said the prayer. I said, God, just help me. Show me what to do. Because I didn't know. And you know what my mom said? She's like, the answer's here, Kate. You know what to do. You know. And I prayed. I never prayed before. I wasn't like against God, but I prayed and I knew, and I waited a few days and I decided, you know, I can't have this baby. I can't put a child through that because my moral standing, the moral standing I think I have, so that 10 years down the line, I don't feel like crap about myself. That's a great reason to bring a baby into this world, you know? No, no. And I did the thing that was, thank you, thank you. Because I was able to get thrust into this and I have so much time. So please work with me because I will help you. I will help you find God. And that's what happened for me. After that, I was sober by this point. I was done. I came into AA. I said to my brother, he was now sober at this point, 6 months. I said, Kevin, take me to AA. I'm pretty sure I'm supposed to be there. These things don't happen to normal drinkers. They don't. You don't get knocked up by like, no, you don't even know who, you know? And I went in. It was a Thursday night meeting. And I remember, and I didn't have my head down. I was ready to go, dude. Show me what this is all about. you know? And I went every day, and I met this woman, and she had red hair and beautiful curls, and I was like, ooh, I want her, you know? And I picked her, and I said, show me. And she had 2 years sober, and she was cool, and she was young, and she had 2 kids, and she showed me a little bit, you know? And I was so open, like, this was a sponge ready to go. And people would start to say, like, whoa, you only have 30 days, what's going on? I said, what? I just had 10 years of hell. What do you mean I only have 30 days? I don't give a shit how many days I have. I'm sober, baby. And I love life. And they're like, watch out. You're going to fall off. Watch out for the pink cloud. You know what that meant to me? This is just a warning out there to people who talk about the pink cloud. That scared me not into sobriety. That made me feel like this thing wasn't permanent. That made me feel like AA wasn't going to fill that void. And it made me feel like it was a temporary fix and I was going to lose it. And I got so feared up. I was like talking to everybody about it. I was like, what are they talking about? What's the pink cloud? And they're like, well, it's when people new come in and then they get a job and they're happy. I was like, I've always had a job. And I just, I'm like done being drunk. Like, save me, you know? And that's the pink cloud thing messed with me for a little bit there. Like almost caused me to just give up, you know? And then I started going through the steps. And I was super confused, obviously. And like, I was calling myself an alcoholic. Hi, I'm Kate, I'm an alcoholic. I had no clue what that meant. And I knew something was wrong. And this was the first time I started to know me. And I started to feel my gut. And I started to listen to it. And it was a little trustworthy. Like, I had something here. I think it was that spirit we talk about that's in here. Like, I've always had what's going on. I just had to get unblocked from all that shit. And so I was in a meeting and I heard this woman and she was wiling out about AA. And I was like, oh, my God. I got to work with her. Like, I knew it. And my sponsor was amazing, but I didn't want what she had totally, you know? But this woman, like, I wanted what she had. And she had the 12 Steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. She had the big book. She had fellowship that I had, like, never seen before. And no one was putting her down. And no one was talking about falling off the pink cloud. And no one was talking about meeting makers make it. And no one was talking about halt or whatever that thing is. She was talking about, what's up with you? What's your program like? And do you know why you're an alcoholic? And I said, oh, no. Why? What am I? And she was like, let's go. Meet me Tuesday. And I was like, okay. And I showed up super early and I waited in my car just to hit the time. So she didn't think I was like super crazy. And I went in and we went through the doctor's opinion. And I found out, oh, my God, I'm not a horrible person. And I was calling myself this thing. I didn't know. And she broke it down in a way that was so... The reason I love AA so much is because of how she broke that down for me. God spoke through her that night and through that day when I saw her. And he came like right into me, like so hard, you know. Like he just like, whoop, you're here. And I got that gift, like... He gave me that gift to translate this to women. I'm 10 months sober and I've taken 5 women through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, fully through, you know? Like that's a miracle, you know? And so we sat 4 sessions, we sat every Tuesday for 4 weeks. And at the end, she was like, let's wait till next week to do. And I was like, no. And she's like, well, it's been a lot of hours. And I was like, no, can we see what 10 and 11, 12 are like? Like, I'm like an excited cat, like ready to go. And I was fired up by step. It didn't matter, man. I made amends to my dad who I hadn't spoken to in 6 years. I was going to go to my grave before I spoke to that man. I did a fist up with her within a week. I sent a letter to him, and it was so neutral. It was like, you know what? The past is the past. The future needs to happen. I don't know what that means for you, but here's my phone number. And he called the next day. And I was like, oh, I messed up. I literally was like, oh, no, I can't pick it up. And I picked it up. And yes, they drive me crazy, but I don't care. They are who they are. I am a different person because of this program. And God, like this woman came into my life and put my hand in the hand of God. And someone did that for her and someone did that for her sponsor. And that's what they say when God is speaking through certain people. And isn't it true though? You hear that person and you're like, holy shit, I need what they have. And trust me right now, I cry a lot and I don't have, every day is not happy and peaches and rainbows. And like people think that they're like, here's Kate. She's so perky. She's happy all the time. Like, no, I got real life going on. But trust me when I say that thing that's in there, that anxiety that like you want to kill yourself over, it's really not there anymore. And I was nervous coming here and I was like, nope, this isn't about me. And I prayed to God, God, take my ego out of this, please. So there's one person out there that's sitting in the middle. They're sitting in the middle. They're like, I can't ever drink again, but I can't be sober. They're going to hear this and they're going to be like, oh my God, I was emotional. I was hypersensitive. I was crazy. I dated everyone in the world. I took a stand July 5th. I made a decision. I took my third step decision July 5th. You know what I'm saying? And I came in on my hands and knees and I was done. And I got through the steps. Oh, if you've never read 10, 11, and 12, it's the greatest thing you'll ever read in your life. And I take girls through and they're doing their fifth step and I'm crying. And they're like, they think I'm the weirdest thing. And I started this new thing. Like, I'll put a chair out and I'll be like, let's invite God. You know? And they think I'm such a nerd. And I am. I don't care. This is my life. So I had that spirit of alcohol. I needed it. And now I've replaced it. And this is so much better. I can't even explain it unless you've done it. And if you're at a place where you're like, I want to feel that, go through the steps and then help others. That's the point of this whole thing. Bill Wilson only said one thing when he met people. Pass it on. He would shake your hand and say, pass it on. That's what we're supposed to do, you know? And if I have to do it. It's the greatest experience I've ever had. And when I'm tired and I'm like, I don't want to do this. They are annoying me. I'm tired. Their emotions are out of control. They keep texting me about this and that. I do it anyway. And I think the biggest thing I just figured out recently is unconditional love. I didn't love anything. I didn't love myself. I didn't love my mom. I didn't love anybody. Unconditional love is like the most amazing thing I've ever, I can't even believe it. And these girls are teaching me this because I love them unconditionally no matter what. And I never did felt like that. And the more I work with somebody, I love myself so much and I will never, ever, ever, as long as I stay in this spiritually fit condition, you know, I will never, ever go back there. I don't have to. I got to do a few simple things. You're telling me I got to do that? Write some inventory at night, call somebody, and that's it? And work with others? Sold. Like, I'll do it, you know? And I think that, oh my God, look, I'm running out of time. So anyway, the bottom line is that it is just amazing. And you might think I'm like crazy and I'm an evangelist or whatever. Like, no, I think you get it when you get it. And I think everyone has their own program. And if it works for you to sit in meetings and do that, great. I'm a real alcoholic. I cannot stop once I start and I cannot stay stopped. I am a real alcoholic. I need this work. And this is amazing. And I can't even believe, I literally thought to myself, why would they ask me to speak here? And then I remembered, I love who I am now. And this is who I am. And if it wasn't for this program, I truly think I probably would be somewhere really scary, you know? I've only scratched the surface of this thing and I'm very aware of that. I'm very, very aware that I'm very new. And when the girls meet me and they put me up here, I say, no, bring me down. We're right here. I'm the same as you, please, because I will mess up and I'll disappoint you. And then you'll have to do a four step on me with somebody else. Right? I try and make sure they know this is not, because I can talk well. I'm a salesperson. That's it, you know? So if you haven't tried it and you're like, well, I'm missing something. You know, try it. Just give it your all. Like, if you're willing and you're ready, like, you're it. And I heard this one thing, two things I'm going to end on. A woman I heard last night speak, she shared at a meeting and she has 25 years sober. And I actually was speaking at the meeting, but just on like a passage. And she said, wow, your enthusiasm is really exciting. And I'm 25 years sober and I'm still that excited. And I said, thank you, God, for sending her to me, because I question it every day, because some people will share after I tell my story and they're like, I was that excited and then I relapsed. And that scares me. And I have God now. I don't have to worry about that. And she made me realize, like, this does work. 25 years later, I can look forward to something. And the last thing I'm going to say is, I heard recently, like, I used to think I was having a spiritual experience, which I absolutely have had, but now I truly believe I'm a spiritual being in a human experience. I am fucking wearing skin and walking around, and I'm doing this work, and I'm supposed to, they said, you're a spiritual being in a human experience, and you need to bring your sunlight wherever you go, and that's what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. Thank you so, so much for having me.